This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Freaky Fauna Friday, where every Friday we take a little time and explore some of the freaks of nature from around the planet we cherish so deeply. So please, jump aboard and let's explore the wilds together.
Hey, welcome back to Freaky Fauna Friday. I am Mr. E.
And I'm Jay. Welcome back to this peaceful podcast, this nice, beautiful Friday. It feels good to be back.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it feels good to be alive.
With the weather being colder and our ice fishing trip with the Patreon people coming up,
ooh,
I have a special Freaky Fauna Friday for everybody.
Ooh.
Now, I've said this a few times. It's one of my favorite fish.
Oh, surely you're talking about the bowfin. Well, wait.
I didn't say my favorite fish. I said one of my favorite. This is top.
Oh, yeah.
20.
We already covered the bowfin on Freaky Fauna Friday.
Like episode one?
Episode one.
Because I know fire salamanders was episode two.
The mighty bowfin, though, has kicked us off. Kicked off the show with a fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's my background is in fish and amphibians, and they have a...
Helps.
They have a striking higher percentage of Freaky Fauna Friday than...
Striking? Yeah. Like a... With fishing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a fishing term.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I'm just being dumb.
No, I don't care.
That's fun.
They were going to talk about northern pike.
Ooh, the northern pike. All right. Is there a southern pike?
Now,
I've always wondered that.
Yes, no.
Or is there no southern pike? It's just pike.
So, we'll come back around to pike, the term pike.
Okay.
Because pike is a European name. Well, I can do it now. Northern pike is the animal we're going to talk about. I'll answer your question really quick. Pike is a European, so there are pike. In Europe.
Right.
Pike are native to the entire northern hemisphere.
Okay.
The pike family is. The Esox, which we'll talk about here in a second.
Okay.
Now, technically, northern pike, there are two species in Europe. One is the giant pike, which is now officially declared extinct, but still might exist.
Okay.
Which they were like 6 or 7 feet long.
It's like a muskie?
They were bigger than muskie. They were probably the biggest living Esox of the last, 1,000 years or so.
Okay.
And now they've done some genetic studies in the pike that still exists.
Yeah.
And they think they like bred out, like we talked about with blue whales. That they just got so low in numbers that we're breeding with other closest,
species.
Other pikes.
Yeah. So in the same species, right? But different.
Close. Very like cousins. Okay. Essentially cousins in the species terms.
Right.
So while technically northern pike do inhabit like Russia and Sweden and Canada, there are biologists that argue that those are separate species because they can no longer share genetics.
Okay. They can't make it back to where the other ones are.
And I'm not saying that, we're not talking, when we talk about that, not individuals. The genetics can't spread across back to the other side of the population. So if you look at the Mississippi drainage, for example, it's thousands of miles long if you count all the drainage.
Okay.
That there's species that live in the headwaters that live all the way down in Louisiana, that they're considered the same species because the genetics can make it
all the way up
and all the way down.
Gotcha.
Northern pike can't because it can't. Then there's a saltwater transformation. So it's an argument. It doesn't really matter for a lot of people, but
okay.
It's interesting enough. There are quote unquote northern pike in Sweden, and there are northern pike in Canada, in Ohio, and some fishery biologists will tell you that they are the same species.
Hmm.
And others will tell you they are different.
Okay.
To me, I could go either way. I could see both arguments. Mandibular pores.
That's the difference what?
We'll come back to that.
Okay. I know what those are.
Mm-hmm. You do. But northern pike. Since I was a little kid, I've had a fascination with these guys. I wanted to catch one forever. The first time I went ice fishing was 11. a lady from our church sponsored us. We were, you know, we were at a pretty poor childhood. My parents tried very, very hard. We had a good life. I'm not saying anything like that. But, you know, money was tight. So a family sponsored us from church, and they got us all, like, ice fishing gear. They got us the whole beginning setup.
Dang, that's awesome.
So dad took us up to Grandpa Bob's cabin before we re-owned it.
That sounds like something first anglers or future anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio would do.
They are. They're great.
Yeah.
Which I just talked to Tosh about doing the ice fishing. Anyways, I'll be quick since we're not talking. I wanted to catch one. So we went up there, and that's all I wanted to catch. So I had
Northern Pike. Yeah,
I still have the three wooden tip-ups with the yellow spools. I still use them.
Yeah.
They're 20 years old now.
I know what you're talking about.
I got them off of Amazon for $10, the three of them. They're I've never changed the line on them. Dang. They still catch fish.
Dang.
That's
wild, actually.
Yeah, they're over 20 years old now.
Yeah, it shouldn't work like that.
They're fine. I had four, and I'm down to three.
That's pretty good.
And the spool just unspooled. Like, the screw came out, and fish took the spool.
Oh, he took it with him.
Yeah. So I caught one. I sat on the ice for like 3 days, and we didn't catch anything because it was horrible.
Yeah.
We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
And I finally caught one. So these guys hold a special place in my heart.
All right.
They're also called Michigan alligators.
I could see that.
I have some quotes from naturalists who were studying pike. So the first quote comes from 1884. These are mere machines for the assimilation of other organisms. That's from George Brown Good, natural historian of useful aquatic animals.
Okay.
Of 1884. And then the next quote is from Marin Marcosa of Wisconsin Bureau of Fishery Management. He says, with the exception of Homo sapiens, there is perhaps no other species so deliberate or so dedicated to gluttony as Isa lucosa, the northern pike. It is a vicious feeder that finds most creatures, even squirrels and sandpipers, fair game.
Hmm. Well, they got big, sharp needle teeth.
And they eat everything.
Yeah. Anything that's like shiny and bright. I combined it. I've had
them eat cameras.
Yeah.
They'll eat each other. I've seen pike hanging out of pike.
Oh, yeah, me too. We've caught pike with pike in their bellies.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just as funny that naturalists that study them are like, these are the pure gluttons.
Yeah.
These are true apex predators. Let's talk about some facts about them first. They pretty much are very, very adaptable. Oh, to answer your southern and northern pike thing. So pike was a British term for toothy fish.
Okay.
Trout, pike, and carp. So when they got to America, they used to be called yellow pike and blue pike, which are walleyes and then a blue walleye.
Okay.
Because they had teeth.
Right.
Even though there are zander, which are a cousin of walleye in Europe.
So basically pike meant they had teeth.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's pike, trout, bass, which were sea bass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's two different families of bass today.
Okay.
It's because they kind of look similar when Europeans got to North America. They just called them bass.
Gotcha.
So there's the sunfish is why we call them. It's as far as scientific terms, like largemouth, smallmouth, spotted bass are all sunfish.
Okay.
But there are pickerel in North America. There are chain pickerel.
Oh, a bunch of pickerel.
Redfin pickerel.
Grass pickerel.
And so like the chain and redfin, like the chains go all the way south. Like I've caught chains in Florida. I've caught chains in Arkansas.
Okay.
And they get big, not as big as pike, but they get pretty big. So that'd be your southern pike.
That would be.
Yes.
Okay.
Just so to answer your question.
Okay.
They look very, very similar. Their patterns are a little different. But yeah, they're adaptable to many freshwater environments. They can be found in rivers, deep water ecosystems, open giant lakes, small like slough ponds and everything.
Mm.
Pike are extremely adaptable. North America and Euro-Asia. So from Russia to Sweden to North America, like I said earlier, it's just depending on where you want to split hairs on a species.
Okay.
They live a pretty long time for a fish. They grow really quick, but they live to be between 12 and 15.
That's pretty old for a fish.
Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of fish that kind of exist in that middle ground.
Mm-hmm. You either live fast and hard or mm-hmm. you live a long time.
Yeah. And so these guys are kind of on the lower end of fish, but for how fast they grow, they do live a pretty decent time.
Okay.
There's some reports of them living to be in their 20s.
Mm.
And those are your giants, those trophy animals.
And those are the hardest ones to catch, too, because they're smart.
Smart.
Yeah.
They get up to 60 inches long.
That's insane.
They can weigh up to 55 pounds.
That's wild. The biggest one I've seen caught was like 36.
My biggest is 38 that I've caught myself. Mm-hmm. Biggest I've ever seen caught was in the 40s. Whew. Low 40s, like 42, 43.
So wild.
I've seen pictures of 52s.
That's so crazy.
So anything over, depending on where you're at, anything over like 33 is considered a trophy for most anglers. I want
it's a one nice
in,
fish.
I want one in the 40s.
That would be amazing.
They exist, and I fish for them enough that eventually I'll run into one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've hooked two that are probably in the 40s, and they just are, they know to get off. They're smart. But yeah, up to 55 pounds. They're olive green and colored, mottled, and spotted. They can have a little bit of variation in their coloring, but northern pike are... So what's the difference between pike and musky colors? Do you remember?
So yeah, the northern pike, I believe, has like the dark skin with the white spots.
Yeah, so dark background, light spots.
Yeah. And then muskies, the reverse, the light background with dark spots.
The stripes, but yeah. Or but spots, they can be a little spotty. Too.
Yeah, it's
mostly
depends.
Like kind of stripes for musky, but yeah.
It's just, yeah, and if you don't know the difference, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference seeing the
They're
two fish.
They're very similar fish.
Yeah.
They do not behave at all the no, same. But
yeah, they act very different because musky or muskellunge is the name. But musky was that colloquial term? Musky?
Yeah, muskellunge is the Native American word for them.
Okay. But yeah, first time I ever seen, because we always fish for pike growing up my whole life, so I always knew what those words were. First time I seen a musky, I thought it was a pike on steroids. But after I got, you know, a little more familiar and you look at the finer details like those.
They look very different once you kind of know.
Yeah, once you kind of know. Because
horses and donkeys.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I guess.
If you're just driving by and you see them in a pasture,
they're
the same shape.
Yeah, true.
They're the same shape.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really start looking at them, you're like
wait, very different, yeah.
What do they eat? The answer to that is everything.
Yeah.
I've found turtles and muskrats and ducks and pike, and there's several people have been attacked by pike. Most time when that happens, it's like you already mentioned, you're wearing jewelry, and they bite the jewelry, and then they realize that they're attached to something bigger.
Huge, yeah.
Pike are famous for having bigger eyes in their mouth.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. And I've been around in a lot of water with a lot of pike. I've never had an altercation with one.
I've had a paddle bit by a pike.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't want to get bit by one, but I've also never had the fear of them either.
I'm not scared of pike.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wear jewelry by them. So we already mentioned muskie. A young person did die in Lake Erie from a muskie attack.
Oh, wow.
Getting bit and slit.
Yeah.
And bled to death.
Yeah, because their teeth are
very sharp,
razor sharp, especially on the sides. And then the ones in the front are all like little needles.
Predators, mostly other pike, humans, and sometimes birds and otters. Depending on their size, you know, it's really ranges. If we're talking about baby or, you know, young pike, baby pike, everything will eat them because they're small.
Yeah.
But once they're big, big adults, it's really just people and maybe otters.
And I think other pike maybe be about the only thing.
I'm talking when they're like 50-something inches.
Oh, that big. Okay. One time, here's a good story. We got to share fishing stories. We're talking about fish. We were in this little bay called Nelly's Bay. The only way you can get to is up in Canada. You have to like drag your boat into it. And we always found good fishing there. Like that was always our spot. And we were fishing back in there one time for, it was like 3 days in a row. We were pulling up pike left and right. And each one we pull out had this huge gouge out of the side of it. Just this big, like big bite mark. One after the next. And some of these fish were like 30 something inches. It's a big bite still out of the side of them. It's nuts. And we were just wondering, you know, like, I wonder what something's in. There's a monster in here. Something's going after these fish. Something. And then finally, that's when I caught my first muskie. I caught a muskie back in there. We don't know if that's what did it, but probably was.
That or a bowfin.
Ooh.
Bowfins are famous for removing chunks out of other animals.
That's what it was. It was chunks.
Because of their, well, we've talked about serrated maxilla and the conical teeth.
Yeah.
When they'll just hold and just shake, and then there'll be a chunk of whatever. So,
I wonder if there was a monster, one of them back there, too.
Probably. Musky and bowfin hate each other. They fight on sight.
Then maybe not.
No, I mean, if there's...
I mean, they could be, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, they co-occur a lot.
Okay.
Just a big female bowfin just hate musky.
Those northern pike are getting beat up.
So, northern pike are a cold water species. Where we're at in Ohio is about the furthest south they go, traditionally.
Yeah.
St. Mary's is traditionally in Ohio, like they're the last stronghold of Northern Pike. I've caught them there.
So great, or is it Great Lake St. Mary's or something? Or something like that.
But yeah, so they only function in cold water regions. They are freshwater predators. So if they get too warm, they just don't exist. That's where you start seeing pickerel take over.
Okay.
And like grass pickerel are tiny, like a big one's like a foot long.
Yeah.
But then chain pickerel and even redfin pickerel get fairly large. They can't, like I already said, they can get really, really big. So unlike muskie, they are considered to be very, very less intelligent.
Oh, okay.
Muskie are known for being very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Northern pike have a pretty small brain mass compared to their body size and their eye size.
Okay.
And when you kind of look, we talk about behaviors, you really kind of see the differences. Where muskie are much more, think about something before they strike, they'll completely ban it. Little pike will eat everything.
Yeah.
I've had pike that I've released and they went right around and bit another.
Bit again, yeah.
Pike, so they do have a sister order. Pike are related to the salmon order.
Hmm.
But while the latter is, you know, the pike is the drag racer, and the salmon is more like
the long distance
runner.
Gotcha. Okay.
but yeah, so they are their first freaky fun fact. They are esociforms or esocs.
Okay.
You ever heard me talk about it on the other show? I just call them esocs because it's the esocidae is the family.
Okay.
Which roughly translates to like ecosystem kings.
Hmm.
Pike, pickerel, and muskie, wherever they end up, they generally are considered the ecosystem king. There are very few North American or, you know, any fish for that matter, that can kind of knock them off that pedestal. And depending on if they end up in wetlands, like I always, you know, bowfin, another competitor, but that fight can go either way.
Yeah.
And then there are several other fish, but this is why I always talk about like largemouth bass are never meant to be an apex predator.
Right.
These are supposed to be on top.
Yeah.
They don't function the same way whatsoever. Very few pike make it to adulthood and with very, like, yeah. But yeah, so they're from a small order that only contains two living families. They have a sister order, the salmoniforms, or salmon-like fish. The most salmon-like fish of these being the salmon, obviously. But then, like, white fish are also in that, which don't look like as much salmon. They look like big minnows.
Mm.
But yeah. But pikes are members of the Esociidae family. They're found in cold waters in the northern hemisphere. Unlike their highly migratory salmon cousins, these fish tend to, you know, stick around, lurk in the weed beds before they dart off to kill something. Sorry. I'm out of breath. The American muskie being the largest by weight, the northern pike being the longest by length.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We're talking about world records.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then just because they're smaller doesn't mean they're less fierce. They are ambush predators. These guys are perfect lay-in-wait predators. They are very curious if you watch them on some of the cameras underwater. They'll come and look at stuff, but they're perfectly camouflaged for laying in the bottom of weed beds.
Yep.
And quickly shooting out. They can hit bursts of speed of up to 10 to 12 miles an hour.
It's pretty fast.
Which is very fast for a pond fish, essentially.
Okay.
We're not talking about open water fish. You know, these guys mostly are found in much more shallower waters than some of that.
Yeah.
But I've caught them in 80 or 90 feet of water on Lake Michigan salmon fishing.
Yeah, they're there.
Yeah, they're out there. They don't care. They'll end up anywhere. But they're cylindrical bodies, and if you look at the fin placement, being most of the dorsal, the anal, and their tail fin being really, really far back on the body,
mm-hmm.
it kind of makes one large tail fin.
Gotcha, okay.
And so that's a torpedo shape.
Pretty powerful.
But for short distances.
Yeah.
If they're going too fast for too long, they start having trouble being stable.
Gotcha. Okay.
They start burning up more and more fuel. They just, you know, they can't do it. So they're like a burst predator.
Hmm.
Like I already said, another freaky fun fact, they are highly adaptable, whether that's, you know, different pond conditions, different tannic levels, different water levels, different food sources.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that is real hard on them is temperature.
Okay.
In the summer because of their O2 requirement. So they and ponds in the south, they really start struggling. Not saying they can't. They end up pretty far south. Like they can, any pond in Ohio or any body of water in Ohio probably can have them. The Northern Ohio River has them. Like they can end up a lot of places, but once you start getting far enough south the summer, they just can't keep up.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So this strategy, you know, their diet, they switch. They eat everything from fish and frogs to turtles to birds to mammals. You know, they do not care.
They do like crabs and stuff too.
If they were to run into them,
like crawdads and
oh yeah, yeah, I've cut them open and had
yeah
crawdads in Michigan and stuff like no, they'll even eat bugs. They're not afraid. So we tell people this. I mean, I use really big baits for them.
Yeah.
But I've also caught them on panfish jigs.
Oh, yeah. We have too.
So they do not stray away from any food source.
Yeah.
I have midges, which are an aquatic insect. I've had them full of midges.
Okay.
Which are what trout, like trout are famous for being midge eaters. They're tiny. But, you know, trout will eat hundreds of them. So they're cousins of northern pike will too. But yeah, they're found in almost every type of freshwater cold system.
Okay.
And that's from everything from deep lakes, streams, rivers, muddy ponds. They can tolerate a range of oxygens. It's really just that temperature that really is a struggle for them. There are very few bigger freshwater predators in most of the North American pikes or the northern pikes range. So they're mostly top dog. Their only other real enemy is pike, bowfin, and muskie.
Okay.
So there's really not much.
Not a lot, yeah. In us.
Yeah, but I'm talking, it just, yeah. You know, they're famous for their fight. As soon as the, they are aggressive fish, especially when feeding. Large individuals will often lay into smaller ones, both in defending their territories and in acts of cannibalism. Sometimes they just bite other pike just to get them away.
Yeah.
And you'll see young, like 22-inch pike with just giant slices in them. As soon as the ratio of predator to prey reaches 2-1, a scarcity of food drive turns this species into cannibals.
Oh, okay.
So they are a self-regulating species no matter what anybody tells you. So there's a big drive in a lot of places where they're like, we got to kill these pikes so we can get our walleye back.
Yeah. Now the pike will do it themselves.
They will.
Yeah.
As soon as they start getting a little hungry, they will eat each other.
Yeah.
They're not. Yeah. Young pike are very vulnerable to having their kills stolen by older members. We talk about this a lot when we're running tip-ups and stuff. Your little pike will come in, bite the food, kill it, and then swim away really quick. Because their only defense is their mouth, and they're worried that they're a big one's around.
Gotcha, okay.
So they don't want to be sitting there trying to eat something and them get eaten.
Right, yeah, true.
So they'll kill it and drop it and swim away and see if another pike comes out to steal their food.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back out and eat it.
That's pretty smart.
Muskie do that too. But yeah. Here's another freaky fun fact for you that may surprise you. They are not venomous.
Oh, why would that surprise me?
Just because did you think they were venomous?
No.
So there's common rumors in most of the northern pikes range that they are venomous.
Huh.
And this comes from their seemingly excessive bleeding of people experience when they're bitten or cut by pike.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Now we're getting into the freaky fauna part.
Yes. But this is caused by an anticoagulant in their saliva. So it's not venom, but they do have an anticoagulant enzyme.
Okay.
So you're not imagining it if you get cut by a pike.
Yeah.
That you are bleeding, like it won't stop.
Yeah.
But people would say, like, yeah, they're venomous. You know, they get infected, like they inject you with stuff.
Huh.
They are not venomous. It appears to be entirely baseless, you know, but there actually has been tons of research done on this because people were so convinced that they did have some kind of venom.
Now, I know they don't have venom, but I know they're really mucousy.
Yeah. Well, that's their skin.
Yeah. Their skin's really like, I don't know. It's like a big snot rag. Like when they're really like, I don't know. When like, let's say you pull them into your, and they're flopping around your net and you get their hook out. By the time you grab them to pick them up. Yeah. That's just a big wet mucus coated fish.
Yeah. Their immune system.
And
they smell. So there's your next freaky fauna fact.
Okay.
Is they mimic the smell of fathead minnows.
Oh, really?
Stink they have?
Yeah, they do have a unique smell. It's different than like smallmouth or...
It is the musk of fathead minnows.
Huh.
One of their favorite prey sources. Muskie do it too, but these guys, so they can sneak up on prey fish.
They can't smell them. They smell like
bait.
Yeah, they don't smell like predators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's pretty cool.
They used to be a delicacy, and I still think they are. Mm-hmm. They're delicious. But they're everything from, they were like very, very like high end food. They were also used for caviar.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
People have eaten their eggs. I mean, I don't like to take the females when they're full of eggs.
Right. Yeah.
But people do eat their eggs. If you're going to take a female full of eggs, you probably should eat their eggs. They have billions of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You already killed it. And I wonder why it's not. considered like a delicacy or anything anymore. I guess I'll talk about this really fast. If anyone's ever fished for pike, or you plan on doing it, or plan on eating them, when you fillet a pike, basically they got these bones that run up their sides, and they're called Y bones. At least that's the term.
Yeah, well, Y bones is correct.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a part of their spinal rib cage system,
and it comes down, and it's basically just this big Y that goes through the meat, and it's really small, like thicker than hair, but you know, not too much thicker, I guess. But it's a fine, crunchy bone, but it gets in the meat, and it's kind of difficult to fillet out if you don't know what you're doing. So I think that's why most people maybe stay away from pike or mm-hmm. stray away from eating them, just because it's no one wants bones in their food, and these are hard to get out. So what most people do is they cook them, and then they pull the bones out after. Or if you know the technique to fillet them out, you can fillet them out.
They're not hard to fillet out.
But if you don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. If you're new to, like, if you're used to just trimming walleye or bass, yeah, these guys have extra.
Yeah, because I just fillet them like that, and then mm-hmm. I just cut two fillets out of that.
Right. Yeah, you split that fillet in half. Yeah. That's what my dad does.
It's the easiest way. There are people that carve it.
Mm-hmm, carve it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
It's more time consuming. But there's another way.
The pulling?
No, another. Well, even another way.
Okay.
So my dad will make, and I'll.
We're at 30 minutes on Freaky
Fauna. I know, this is a long Freaky Fauna, but you know, it's a fish near and dear to our heart.
I do love these guys.
And we eat them every year. Like, it's part of our routine, I guess. I don't know, like my family.
Oh, yeah.
But my dad started doing this, so we had a bunch of extra, like, pike in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And we'd end up having, like, extra bringing home. Because normally we fish pike, bass, and, you know, the common guys, you know, for northern U.S., for North America. But pickling pike, so pickled fish. Now, it sounds gross, everyone at home, but it's not. I mean, I'm not a big fish. I'm not particularly a big fish eater. If it tastes like fish, I don't like eating it. But the pike and bass we normally fish for are so fresh and clean and good, they don't taste like fish. So you take pike and you fillet them out. You don't have to cut the Y bones out. Just make it one big fillet and then cut that fillet into little chunks. And you can look it up online, like pickling fish recipes and stuff. But my dad makes bread and butter and dill. And but what that does in that process, it dissolves all those bones. So you can fillet them, leave them right in there, and it dissolves them. Like they're not even there. We're never there at all. And it tastes so good. And it's not mushy like a... You'd imagine, like, I've had pickled, like, potted, like, pickled, not pickled, but, like, potted meat or jarred meat. Have you ever had that?
Mm-mm.
Like, jarred beef or deer. It almost comes out like a roast beef, like, mushy consistency.
Okay.
Like, completely cooked out roast beef, and it just smears, basically. That's what but pickled fish, not at all. It's like a nice, chewy piece of meat.
It is good, and I don't like pickles.
Me either, and it's great. So, if anyone... I guess catches pike or eats them regularly and hasn't tried that, I encourage you to look it up and give it a go yourself.
So, unlike a lot of our Freaky Fauna Fridays, these guys are actually very abundant.
Yeah.
So they are
right.
Struggling in some parts of their range. Like all freshwater fish in North America during the Industrial Revolution, the waterways were heavily impacted
mm-hmm.
and they had a dramatic decline.
Yep.
And they were overfished. But then they have bounced back in most of their range. So there's very, like, Ohio, Indiana, there are parts of the southern part of their range.
Yeah.
Where they're not very abundant again yet.
Yes.
But every pond in Michigan has a pike.
Yep.
Every pond in Canada has a pike. Every, you know, every pond in Minnesota, every lake, every river.
Everyone.
Has a pike.
Yep. And we've done a good job for conservation, like limiting them.
Yeah, so they are protected in most of their range for breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the size range, I can talk about Michigan. Ohio doesn't have anything. No, Ohio has rules on them. We just don't have a lot of like recreational fishing for them. But they get 1 year of breeding before they can even be harvested in Michigan.
Okay.
By size.
Yep.
And most, there are lakes where there is no size limit.
Basically, you're saying you can't keep them unless they're a certain length.
Yeah.
They got to be up to a certain length before you can keep them. And then if they're too big, you're not supposed to keep those either. Or you're limited to like one.
Yeah, there's a trophy law in most of Michigan
where
it's like you're allowed one trophy fish a year.
Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you got anything to add for Northern Pike?
Oh, you mentioned their mandibular pores.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Because that was just a fact off the top of my head. This is the longest Freaky Fauna we've ever done.
Yeah. Well, one of them probably.
I don't think we've ever had any over half hour.
No, and I hope you guys are enjoying this fish talk.
Mandibular pores are sensory pores that they have on the underside of their jaw.
Mm.
They act anywhere from like not only sensory, but like picking up pheromones and chemicals in the water. Not quite like a nose. They can sense a little electromagnetic energy.
Yeah,
they're a really, really complex organ that we don't understand very well, and all ESOX have them.
Yeah, basically, if you flip up a pike and look at its jaw,
they're big pores.
Yeah, just like evenly spaced dots or holes just under the lower jaw.
I think pike have eight. Northern pike, I think, have eight. That's the only way you can really tell pike and muskie apart when they're like fry,
small,
like tiny. I'm talking small in your finger.
Yeah,
because they all have the same like. All ESOC babies look the same,
mm-hmm.
where they have the big teardrop through their eye, and
okay,
they all look the same. They're very, very hard to tell apart when they're like under 5 inches,
right?
But for like when my fisheries work, it mattered.
Well, yeah, you're counting them.
Well, pike did not score nearly as high as a muskie.
Correct.
So
that makes sense.
You needed to know if a muskie was in the bunch,
right?
Because that changed the score dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Which meaning good.
Yeah,
muskie's good.
Yeah. If they're supporting a muskie, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I've been just Mr. E today.
And I've been Jay. And on this long episode of Freaky Fauna Friday, as you enjoyed it, why don't you get outside, get some of that fresh, cold winter air in you, and just enjoy this winter and enjoy the holiday season.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Freaky Fauna Friday. If you want to help the podcast grow, remember to share and give it a 5-star review.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.